5 years ago, I was paying $65 a month for my subscriptions. Today, those same subscriptions cost $111, and I don't even use half of them anymore. That's why now I use Rocket Money to manage my subscriptions for me. The app gives you a list of all of your subscriptions and reminds you of upcoming payments, so you're not hit with any surprise charges. On top of that, it also sends you alerts when subscription prices go up, so you always know the price you're paying. If you decide you no longer want a subscription, you can cancel it right from the app. No customer service needed. And the best part is, Rocket Money even reaches out and tries to get you refunded for some of the money you lost. On average, people that cancel their subscriptions with Rocket Money save $378 a year. And overall, Rocket Money has saved its members $880 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Hey, this is Duray, and welcome to Pod Save the People. On this episode, it's me, Diara Kaya Miles, talking about all the news that you don't know with regard to race, justice, and equity. We talk about the things that didn't bubble up in the national conversation, but you should be talking about. We talk about stock increases for companies hiring black CEOs, a school board's attempt to hijack black student podcasts, and what's happening in nail salons. All stuff that we learned and grew in. Today, we're just focusing on the news. Interviews will be back shortly.
Family, welcome to another episode of Pod Save the People. I am Diara Ballinger. You can find me on Instagram and Twitter at Diara Ballinger.
I'm Malzi Johnson. You can find me at Instagram and Twitter at Feral Rapture.
I'm Kaya Henderson on Twitter at Henderson Kaya.
And this is Duray at Diara on Twitter.
Well, where do I even start with my black Mexican self on today?
Let's start in LA.
With the Mexican City Council president. How dare she? But quite believable. We've been having this whole national, really global conversation around, you know, all of the racism that happens within the Latino community. I grew up, as we know, well, not grew. I grew up in DC, but my people are from Minnesota. And we have a very mixed family that is predominantly black and Mexican. And I grew up in Minnesota feeling very held by the Mexican community there on the west side. But anytime I was outside of that very sheltered community with Latinos, it was always, oh, you're Latino? Oh, you black? Oh, you don't speak Spanish? I mean, I can go on and on and on and on. And so my whole life, I felt the schism and the prejudice when it comes to Latino communities. And so still, though, I was shocked and surprised when I saw the president of the city council calling black boys monkeys, calling indigenous people, I think she said, short and dark and ugly. It is wild. This is the most powerful person in local government in Los Angeles. I'm actually in LA now. There was a protest yesterday that some indigenous organizers put together to protest, which I was also happy to see. But there's still other folks that were involved in these conversations that still have their jobs. So it'll be interesting to see how long they will be able to hold on to those jobs. But yeah, what do y'all think about this?
Goodness. You know, I always think it's okay and right when something bad happens to somebody who said something bad. But the thing that I always rest on after the dust settles over situations like this is, what is the culture like that you said that? What is going on? So I can be outraged at the fact that it was said, that, you know, all the things, but the fact that you felt comfortable enough to say it means that there must be such a culture where this type of language and this type of critique and this just really like white supremacist talk. You know, you don't have to be white to be a vehicle for white supremacy. That kind of talk is appropriate. And that is where my cynicism comes in. Because she had to feel empowered to say it. She had to feel okay to say it. And that's a culture thing. That's a system thing. And I don't know how many people you got to fire to fix that.
Maybe I am just old and jaded, but I wasn't actually shocked, right? One, I know that, I mean, we know about colorism issues in the Latino community, not just in the Latino community, in the Black community, colorism, anti-Blackness, period, the end, right? That's clear. And we know about power. To me, this was a total exercise in power. This was a group of Latinos who were working. The meeting was about consolidating their power in LA by literally dividing up communities. In some places, that's called gerrymandering, I guess, when it's for voting purposes, but it feels similar. Making sure that there were assets, trying to move assets around and stuff, like literally not taking the recommendations from the task force that is supposed to divide up the city so that they could divide up the city to consolidate their power as Latinos. And listen, I'm not throwing stones at that, right? I read something which basically said that Latinos are, you know, whatever percentage of the population, but that they're percentage of representation is much lower. And so, you know, they're trying to consolidate power, be representative, and they thought they were with their family, talking how families talk. And y'all, let's just keep it real, right? You talk very differently with your family than you do out in polite company. The problem is, y'all know who to trust and who not to trust. We all have these devices in our hands, and somebody recorded that meeting. Well, hot dog. I will say it was interesting, and I think a good reminder for people in power to think about what you say, how you say it, what you do, how you do it. We used to say, if you don't want something to show up on the front page of the paper, don't say it, don't write it, don't nothing, right? It's just that simple. And I think this lady forgot that. But I also was sort of amazed at the fallout of it. She was like, well, I'm stepping down from, you know, whatever, the leadership role, but I'm not quitting my job. Then the president of the whole United States weighs in and was like, I think she should step down. What? Like, what? I mean, I literally was like, really, President Biden? Because there's a whole lot of other people that you should call out too, if that's the case, right? Like, I just thought that I'm just sort of interested in how people perceive this thing, because I think this thing is happening all the time, right? That this is not an isolated incident. This is just one that got caught on a hot mic. But I think this is happening all the time. I think lots of people in leadership are doing this. I think there's no color, you know, boundaries. Power, anti-Blackness. These are things that are happening on a day-to-day basis.
You know, it was interesting and still is interesting that she's the only person who's resigned from the council, that the other people implicated have not resigned from the council yet. And there are protesters outside of one of the guy's houses, and he's just like riding strong. Like, it is what it is. And it's like, you know, it becomes untenable to work with people. Like, you know, there are lines even on this council where you're like, that's sort of wild. And I appreciate the new city council president saying, we just cannot do work with them on the council. That makes total sense to me. It's like, how do you vote? You have no legitimacy. You need people to at least believe that y'all represent, even if they don't like you, they sort of are invested in the idea the system works. And I don't know if you saw Game of Thrones last night, but there's this great line where one of the women in it says to one of the people in power, she says, remember, you only have as much power as the people give you. And it was like, the people don't always understand that until something like this happens. And you're like, I get y'all shutting down every single, like, make it impossible to do work. Do you know what I mean? Until these people go. And that was also, you know, you never know where your enemies are, boo, because whoever got that recording was close enough.
Was in the room.
And I'll tell you, when I worked for the school system, we had a whole fraud hotline and all this other stuff.
that never caught fraud, but let me tell you, the fraud, like, people were, we had auditors, I mean, and they never really caught fraud, but the fraud hotline, when principals would be mean to people that they had done shady stuff with, every time they call that hotline and be like, they just bought three refrigerators, they just, like, all this stuff, they would call it in. And it was one of those things with, like, don't be shady, y'all, because it comes back.
And even, I don't know if y'all saw her resignation letter, but she almost, like, doubles down in it.
Well, like,
it's like,
come on.
He was a monkey?
There's so many undertones there that's like, I've been fighting just for this specific segment to all the Latina girls, yada, 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 yada.
And she's like, I hope that I can be an inspiration.
Listen, to my staff, I'm sorry that we're ending it this way, ma'am. Well, I don't know. Maybe she can. Maybe her next step is to go get on Donald Trump's reelection team.
I was going to say, this sounds like the politics to Fox News pipeline.
Yeah. How it goes. Knocking her door down.
Okay.
Or we're going to get the essay. We're going to get the essay from her about cancel culture. That's actually what's coming next.
That's what's coming next. Yeah. You know, maybe cancel culture is just our theme for today, because
it's not working.
I feel like in the case of Kanye West, I feel like there was a time where I believe he just couldn't get canceled. And now I'm like, maybe we are on the right path to his cancellation. Perhaps. And, you know, I'm very much like, give people a second chance and let's have a constructive conversation and let's do the things.
Listen, this bruh, where are the people who love him? Where are they? My people would literally come to my house, put me in a straitjacket and take me somewhere in a bunker for a little while so that I don't harm myself or anybody else anymore. Where are the people who, you know, doesn't Donda have some brothers and sisters? Where are the aunties and the uncles? Somebody just gotta go get him.
The thing that I think is definitely working for the right is, if you remember when Trump ran and they released the thing that showed that he needed black men, like he needed some subset of black people, and black women were not having it, but black men were movable. This, I thought about that this morning in the gym. This is the black men strategy. Like, Kanye is the black men tool right now for the right, because even the, I tweeted about him and the number of black men who were like, you know, he's just speaking his mind. Da, 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 da. I'm like, this is wild.
Yeah. I feel like I've said it countless times on this podcast, or at least like in my head, I've said it countless times. But I think there is going to come this. So I've been consuming so much Candace Owens. I'm sorry. Like, so much Candace Owens, so much Fox News, so much Kanye West. His last name, Tucker Child, not Chris Tucker. But yeah, Tucker Carlson. Oh yeah. I'm like, know thy enemy. Know who you labor amongst. And I was, one thing that, and I've always said this, and I've just had conversations on the podcast, is that, black people who are on the left are really going to have to contend with black conservatism in a big way. It's not just going to be these isolated, weird, who's Clarence Thomas? Kanye West is crazy. Candace Owens, she don't even get her hair did. Who's listening to her? There's going to be a uniform big wave of black conservatism. And that's what kind of motivated me to do it, because black people are conservative. Black people have been having to vote Democratic because the Republicans have, you know, been so synonymous with white supremacy. But now that Trump is seen as like this far right weird sector, now that actually gives room for Republicans to be more malleable. So now we can talk about, I'm just being traditional. We're not like, you know, it just gives you more space than when all those things were on top of each other. Now that Trump has like made this unspeakable, you know, subsection of the right, you know? And I think a lot of black people are into it. And I think a lot of those stats, and if you talk well enough and you're concise enough, I think a lot of those stats that they spew off the fentanyl thing, like that is just such a dog whistle. Like George Floyd actually dying from fentanyl. That's just something that like white people hear, or excuse me, Republicans hear. And unless you know more than anything that you will both are on the same team. Just countless other things like about like certain critiques of being Black Lives Matter and stuff. Like it's just certain things that I'm hearing where I'm like, no, this is sort of laughable now, but I think this is going to be something that Black people, this is the next frontier. This is going to be the thing to really have to deal with, because Black people, because the other one that always rings in my head too is the abortion stats. More Black babies are being born or being aborted than being born, and like these type of things. This is the indoctrination that happens. There's some really good videos on TikTok from countless Black men who are in like what you would call hotep culture, which would be like these really Afrocentric men who are kind of like Black nationalists who end up kind of coinciding with like anti-Semitism and patriarchal ideology before, and like they have been enlightened out of it, but they talk about how they got it just sounds like how they got brainwashed into this ideology. And I think that it's happening in a high force, and like it kind of makes me scared about what voting's gonna look like. And I think that Black folks, specifically Black folks who believe in voting and who are on the left and who believe in government and who want that kind of organizing, have to pay attention to this. You know, if not Kanye, but the fact that like Kanye was on White Chris Tucker on Fox News.
Carlson Tucker.
Okay.
Tucker Carlson, whatever. Wait, what?
It was just me being disrespectful. But I was like,
I think you're so right. And I mean, I think the other side of that coin is that the Democratic Party has no successful plan or strategy to reach Black men. And in fact, Black men as a cohort are usually a complete afterthought, right? So, and I think with Black women, they're just like, you know, we don't have to do much with Black women because we know they're going to come out. And Black men, since they're not going to come out, why would we put any intention, time, or resources into you know, making this thing appealing for them? So I think you're really, really on to something, because I think what is missing from the Democratic Party when it comes to Black men is just kind of a theme or a narrative around opportunity making, right? So I just feel like, and that's what's needed, right? It's need like resources, economic opportunities, blah, blah, blah. And I just don't, there's just not a prioritization of that community. There will be, to your point, I feel like to your point, when it's a total loss. And we're seeing this type of, you know, really like mainstream radicalization happening of like celebrity Black people. I mean, the biggest heartbreaker for me during the Trump era was Ice Cube. That just broke my heart. Oh,
Ice Cube, Lil Wayne, T.D. Jakes. Like, let's
yeah,
not...
but like Lil Wayne, some of them, you know how it is. Some of
them. Steve Harvey, all of these. Listen, there is a very clear Black man strategy. Can we talk about Herschel Walker? Can we talk about Herschel Walker? Like, on the day that these abortion allegations came out, donations to his campaign surged. Like, and I read this article in the USA Today. It was an opinion piece by some set of Republicans that basically were like, we don't care if he, like, drowns baby eaglets, like, in the town square, right?
Not the eaglets, child.
We are electing this cat because, like, this is about power. This is about us taking the Senate. We don't care what he does, what he says, blah, blah, blah. And, you know, I do think that the right has a very clear Black man strategy, and they are winning with it. And we got to deal with that. And, like, I mean, I read that Kanye is going to buy Parler, the conservative platform, so that he can keep on saying what he wants to say and doing what he wants to do. This is a real question, right? Like, you know, you read about people who have to go under conservatorship because they are not in who triggers that process?
But the thing about it is, and I know you're not saying it to be like ableist or anything. It's that I've been watching Kanye West's videos. Kanye West is lucid. Kanye West is here and is a conservative. And I think that sometimes, you know, I love Britney Spears. I love that first 3 seconds of Toxic is my jam. But I listen to Britney Spears talk and I'm like, I get how come it was put up in question. When I listen to Wendy Williams, I'm like, I get how we got there. When I listen to Kanye West, I hear somebody who has been in a certain situation with the Kardashians, has had certain experiences, had the Clintons call the Kardashians about a vaccine. They're in there watching Fox News and having a certain experience and being like, maybe these people are right. And already being, you know, he did produce Jesus Walks. He has come from a middle-class background. You're kind of up in the air. And now he's a billionaire? I implore anybody, I'm not saying to... Of course, I don't think that you'll absorb his politics, but really watch him speak. He's not crazy. He's not somebody who you would doubt his mental faculties. He is just a newly conservative person who's using his money, his platform to espouse what he believes. And
but I don't think this is just about conservatism, right? I think about the video of Pete that he did beheading Pete Davidson. I think about like the impact that the antics have on his children, right? Like I think taken as a whole, right, he's diminishing his business opportunities, right? People are stopping doing like the bank, JP Morgan Chase said, you're going to have to find another place to put your billions of dollars, right? So you're impeding your business opportunities. The impact on your kids is some, there's just a whole, I want us to look at this holistically, maybe from a political perspective, he's fine and he gets to be conservative and do whatever, but I can't help believing that we're watching literally the unwinding of somebody. And that doesn't feel, that feels grimy to me that like, we're all just kind of in the theater watching this thing happen to this person.
It's like Whitney. You know what I mean? I remember like everyone laughing at Whitney when she came to the Grammys and she was super skinny and everybody thought it was so funny. Like, I feel like
it's not
that's
cool.
Also an issue that we have in our community around, you know, the dehumanization of
Black
celebrities.
People.
Yeah. And I
especially.
Think especially and Michael, the same. So and I think Miles with Kanye, though, I think. And I'm not a doctor or a psychiatrist, but I feel like the type of mental illness he has is, you know, there's been these linkages between, you know, creativity, people that have like supreme creativity with bipolar disorder. And those people are tend to be more manic. And so I think part of whatever it is that is contributing to this, whether it's his narcissism, whether it's bipolar disorder, whatever it is, I think I also have to, you know, to Kaya's point, you know, kind of take a step back because he does seem to be very lucid. He does seem to be very calculated in how he's appearing in press, around what he's saying, the sequencing of what he's saying, how he gets messaging out there. And I think, though, that still can be totally related to him spiraling.
I would say I agree with Miles on this one, is that when, did you see that Van, TMZ highlighted that he actually was this same sort of anti-Semitic way back in 2018, but they just edited it out, but they didn't edit out the slavery is a choice comment. It was the same day he said slavery is a choice. They kept slavery as a choice in, but they edited out, I think he praised the Nazi party, but they edited that out in 2018. And it's like, this has been here. We weren't privy to it in the same way. And Trump had normalized, like Trump, I agree with Miles, Trump made the far right so zany that the like, not quite far right, but still bad for Black people is less, like feels less wild to people. And I do think that that's like the opening that Kanye's in, but I don't think this is, mental illness. I will also say, I was talking to my barber the other day and he said to me earnestly, he's like 29, he goes, Dre, how do I find out if I have health insurance? And I go, I mean, don't you do? He was like, I was on the phone with somebody. And so we do this whole thing about Obamacare and like being able to go through the exchange. And I'm like, I'll help you log onto a website. But it was like, once I explained Obamacare and how the right's trying to take it away, and he was like, oh, that's crazy. But before we've had conversations where he's been like, not pro Trump, but like, oh, the left is being crazy. And I'm like, so the only reason you have health insurance is because of, and there is, like, I do think that men, we have just, like, left men out of the equation in terms of the organizing and the education. And I continue to be shocked. The last thing I'll say is that we did focus groups at Campaign Zero with men and women about mass incarceration. And it was so interesting because the women, their perspective was of the people who were home when everybody was locked up. So, like, all of the things we asked them, they were there. They were, like, in community. They had all these different... The men, their perspective was from the people who were locked up, and they did not over, like, the things that they thought were important were actually not the same things. And it was a reminder for us about, like, targeting the different communities is very different. Don't go anywhere. More Pod Save the People's coming.
If listening to Crooked shows in your podcast app is simply not enough, check out the Crooked Radio Takeover every weekend in October on Sirius XM Progress and on the Sirius XM app. It's a great new way to hear and discover all the great voices and shows across the Crooked universe ahead of the midterms. Pod Save the People episodes will air at 10:30 a.m. Eastern Time each weekend, and Crooked listeners can get up to 4 months free, so you can check it out at SiriusXM.com/crooked.
I was a young queer thing in middle school, and all I had was Rent. I had Rent, I had Glee, and then I also had Chicago. Chicago was one of the most captivating films that I've ever seen in my life. Still a little disappointed that when I go to things called speakeasies, they don't not look like the scene and all that jazz in Chicago. It's probably one of the reasons why I need to be a little bit medicated now, because just adulthood has been disappointing. Chicago is just a phenomenal, phenomenal, phenomenal film. And it has been a phenomenal musical. And one thing that I never, ever thought in my entire life that I would see is a Black trans woman playing Roxy Hart. That is just like the out of bounds of what things that I can think are possible. But here we are, and Angelica Ross has made it possible. She is the first Black trans woman to be Roxy Hart. I believe only the second Black woman, second to Brandy Cinderella Norwood, to be Roxy Hart in general. And yeah, I just wanted to bring this to the podcast because it just was good news. And I've known this for a couple of like months now, and I've been seeing everything happen. And then sometimes I just consume good news and just get distracted by all the chaos going on in the world. But I just thought that was so cool. And I just thought it opened so many doors for, you know, black trans women to do things that are outside of the bounds of stereotype. My other friend Sis is in Oklahoma playing Addie. I've never seen Oklahoma, so I have no idea, but apparently that is a role that is traditionally going to a, you know, blonde, thin, white woman, and Sis is a proud, fat, Black trans woman, and she's playing that role. And I just love this storm of, you know, Black trans folks taking over Broadway. And I hope that the fact that these are huge roles, I hope that we see more and more Black trans folks, Black queer folks disrupt roles. I think it's one thing when we get roles that are catered towards us or is very easy to see us in, and child, if you sprinkle some tragedy on it in a Ryan Murphy stamp, then like, okay, now we can see you in this role. We made this for you. I think it's really interesting and radical to see something like Roxy Hart or see a role in Oklahoma be disrupted by the Black trans voice and body and performance. So yeah, I wanted to bring this to you all, and you know, hopefully seduce one of y'all to getting me tickets to see that too.
I just added it to my list. Miles, I just made a note.
okay. I was like,
you
no,
know, you could just buy a ticket, right? You know, that's possible.
No ulterior motives here. No ulterior motives here.
So we're adding it to the list because now my list is Chicago, Piano Lesson, Top Dog, Underdog, Death of a Salesman, and maybe Oklahoma. I've never seen Oklahoma either.
Yeah, but I know Oklahoma's traveling. It's not in New York. She's a part of the traveling cast.
I
know that Angelica Ross' performance of Roxy Hart in Chicago is right here in the city.
Goodness, no! I'm so excited for this. And honestly, Miles wouldn't have known had you brought it to the pod. So thank you for this. I had such a glorious end of last week because I was at Lesbians Who Tech, which to our listeners is a thing that happens every year. That's right. but it's you know, it's lesbians and beyond. It's just like a really incredible, beautiful gathering of, like, you know, queer and trans people. And it just was so nice to be with the peeps. You know what I mean? It's just like, I'm a gay and I'm around the gays all the time, like all the time. But like to be in, like, just completely surround, like in a theater of us, really was magical. So I think this is also like giving me those feels all again, just about the last couple of days that I had in San Francisco at Lesbians Who Tech.
And they all they're all like are big and understand technology.
They are, not me, obviously, to bring the laughs. I emcee the stage, and it, like, you know, it's at the Castro Theater, and then they take over the block where the Castro is on.
Yeah, I was just going to say, if I was a lesbian and single, that's where I would be fish. I would put my rod there. My net, lesbian, not a rod.
Wow! Wow.
my whole net.
It is really dope to see. I can't wait to see Angelica on the stage and to just think through, like, what it means that Black people are just taking over all of these spaces that we were kept out of. And so, and doing it really beautifully. So salon to the ballet. I see people who ain't never thought about a ballet in their life.
Go into the ballet,
right?
I think about people.
Yes.
I think about Broadway. I've been to so many Broadway shows around people who like Broadway. And then it's like, well, all these Black things are on Broadway. And you're like, okay, mm-hmm. I don't have to go sit and struggle through King Lear, which was rough, everybody. I went, but I can go see stuff that like speaks to my real life, you know? So like that is, it's beautiful to watch. And I think Angelica will be just, I mean, it's probably already amazing, but I cannot wait to see it myself.
I thank you for bringing this to the pod, Miles, because I just knew her as Candy Ferocity from Pose, which for sure, one of my favorite characters, but this made me learn more about Angelica. And she is a whole situation. She started her own record label because she wanted to release her own music and not wait for somebody to tell her it was okay to do that. She taught herself coding and, you know, is a whole tech boss. Started a company called Trans Tech Social Enterprises, which focuses on employment and for folks who in the industry, I guess, fostering skills in a technology industry, especially for trans people. She's just got a whole bunch of stuff going on with her. And I think that we will learn more about her because she's going to be a breakout star in this role. But again, on this sort of thing about dealing with people holistically, this lady has a whole lot going on, and I'm excited for the world to see her and learn more about her because, yeah, she's a boss. My news this week is about four young ladies in Denver Public Schools who started a podcast. They were members of the Black Student Association at the Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Early College High School. And they, between a trip to the National Museum for African American History and Culture in Washington and the George Floyd murder, they activated and have been fighting for all kinds of things for more accurate history being taught in school. They have been advocates at the school with their in their school building with their principal. They advocated for the white history teachers. They realized that all of their history teachers were white, that their history teachers needed to deeply learn Black history. And so they got the principal to send the white teachers to the National Museum of African American History and Culture. And they started a podcast after the George Floyd murder called No K-N-O-W Justice, No K-N-O-W Peace, The Take. And the idea was, you know, they are leaders. They felt like they wanted to use their platform. They were inspired by the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee of the Civil Rights Movement. And, you know, they were like, it's our turn to step up and lead and use our platform in a way that resonates with our generation, which is a podcast. And these girls were doing the thing and whatnot. And the Denver public school system decided that the podcast belongs to the school system. In fact, they moved to trademark, the school system moved to trademark the title, No Justice, No Peace, The Take. And these young ladies say that the school system is trying to steal their podcast. And so they are suing for the right to own a trademark. The school system is saying that actually they didn't exactly create this, that a teacher and a principal helped them to create this. And they were district employees and they created the podcast on district time using district resources. They paid the young ladies through an apprenticeship program to start this. And so they are saying that it belongs to Denver Public Schools and they want to broaden it so that more students can participate and whatnot. And these young ladies are like, bump that. This is our podcast. We created it. And they are suing both in state court, but I think also federally. And it's an interesting thing to wonder why wouldn't Denver Public Schools let these young ladies do their thing and keep building their brand? And, you know, they get to take credit and say, sure, like this, you know, this is what happens in our schools. But I don't really understand why they need to own this, why they need to take this away from these young ladies who have done real work. They produced more than 25 episodes. Their podcast is up on YouTube. And usually, if you think about it, right, like if a kid wrote an essay while they were in school and the essay won a contest or turned into a book or whatever, the school district doesn't own that essay, right? So why would a school district believe that it could appropriate and own this body of content work that these students created? I think it opens up broader questions. First of all, it's for little Black girls, right? Which drives me insane. These young people are leading. They are doing exactly what they are called to do to meet the moment. And we should be encouraging them, making it easier for them and whatnot. And the big institution is going to try to take away their trademark and their brand. But I think this has implications for any content, right? Content is king right now. And so any content that you create within an institution like a school system, there need to be clear lines because, you know, people can actually profit from the content that they create. Does that mean if I write a poem on my school issued laptop at my house that the school district owns my poem, right? And I think that these are questions that we're going to need to clarify. I'm just sad that these young people are literally facing, had to get a lawyer and whatnot to deal with this.
Yeah, I absolutely hate this. The thing that that is like continuing to like echo in my like mind is, now what kind of like culture is that going to create at the school now that, like, to me, you're just suppressing children's creativity and excuse me, actually, children are grown, but like the students' creativity by doing this. Like, you now nobody wants to be innovative or wants to share information or think of different ways to, like, just ingenious ways, as I was like reading, just ingenious ways of sharing information and making things palatable to the to an audience. Nobody's gonna want to do that at that school because of those because of this case. It just makes everybody want to kind of just keep their ideas and their innovations to their chest. And it's to me, it's silly for a school to not just like see the bigger picture and see that, oh wow, this letting them have this independently will also just make people feel free to innovate at our school. Yeah, it's just, to me, it's just a little like confusing. Hopefully somebody has something a smidge smarter to say, because I'm just confused, child.
I think, you know, not only is it taking their work product, but one of the things that's so clear to me is what happens. We always talk about capitalism and the profit motive, but this is one that you see so well. Like, the district didn't say, I'm actually really inspired by what our students have done. We're going to make a district-led podcast, and we're going to make a whole course. We're going to teach kids how to do it. We're going to expand it. And we're going to bring these young women on to help us build it and grow the capacity, because we want this to be something that more students can access because they did such a great job. That is one way to do this. But instead, and this is like what capitalism does so well, capitalism says, you created this thing. We own it. And we want to make it more profitable in these ways. But it's like, you're a school. The whole purpose is to teach lessons. The whole purpose is to grow and to invest and to like build up and to shout out. And like, that is the whole purpose. And there was an opportunity to use this podcast as a proof point and as an example of what students can do. And instead they did something else. And that is just really both shameful and disappointing. And shout out to these Black girls for having the reach to get lawyers. Because this stuff probably happens way more than we know. But in districts where Black kids don't have easy access to a lawyer, don't know who to call, don't know what the advocacy looks like, but they got the right ones in Denver, and I'm all about that. Don't go anywhere. More Pod Save the People's coming. So my news is really off the beaten path, but I was reading and I was like, you know what? This is something that I hadn't even thought about. And it's about the working conditions in nail salons. So there is a new law that just got implemented about ventilation, a new set of regulations too. And the new regulations require nail salon owners to protect workers and clients by providing proper ventilation to filter out toxic particles and fumes. And this is taking place in New York City. But what was so fascinating is, and there's a news source called Documented NY, haven't really heard about Documented NY, but they go through this story of a nail tech who suffered 7 miscarriages in the span of 8 years. And the miscarriages coincided with her time as a nail tech. And it talks about she was reluctant to talk about it and didn't want to sort of think about the connection too deeply, but she did, and it helped to push the New York Committee on Occupational Safety and Health to actually address these things. So in 2016, there were a set of nail salon workers who organized around abuse in the nail salon industry. And one of the things that they focused on was the mitigation of toxic chemicals. And it makes total sense to me. There was a report that was done that showed that 20% of nail workers reported having issues with their reproductive health compared to 11% of the U.S. population. And the study, which surveyed about 142 nail salon workers in New York City, also found that 25% of nail techs had complications during pregnancy compared to just 8% of all pregnancies in the U.S. And this is one of those things where I just assumed this was already heavily regulated because, Lord, I walk into the nail salon and it smells like fumes. I could only imagine what it's like to be there all day. And this made me think about all the other studies that probably should be done. I think about the women who go get their nails done every week. I think about the people who spend, you know, people spend a lot of time in nail salons around or in situations that are not well ventilated. And this is one of those things that I just hadn't thought about. As you can imagine, 50% of nail salon workers are Asian and about 15-20% are Hispanic and Latino. You think about the sheer number of low income and or people of color who are in these situations and disproportionately impacted. So I wanted to bring this here because it really was something that I had never even thought about.
Keep the safe spaces safe. Like, that is literally what's coming to my head too. Like, this made me really sad, made me really happy that there's actually being something that's being like done to address this situation. But then also I'm just like, geez, I guess some more general, like, light, like, everywhere is killing you. Everywhere you can go can kill you. And even the nail salon, one of my most sacred safe spaces, it's, even that's venomous. Jeez.
I thought it was, I mean, like you, Miles, I thought it was sort of ironic that this place that is about self-care for usually women, but open for everybody. And I'm actually, shout out to the more and more fellas that I see in a nail salon, because taking care of your claws is really important. But, you know, in this heavily female-dominated client culture that, in fact, is inflicting harm on women's reproductive systems. Like, that just is so cruel and ironic. I thought it was also just sort of heartbreaking to know that, you know, a lot of folks who provide nail services don't speak English. You know, the lady was pointing out that they didn't understand what was written on the bottles. These warnings are on the bottles, right? But if you don't speak English and if you don't read well and if you don't know these scientific terms, that, you know, you're just doing the work, right? And many of these folks are doing the work because they need the money. They're not other employment opportunities. Shout out to ADICAR, the women-led workers center that services the Nepali-speaking community, that hipped her to what was going on. And, you know, community-based organizations, like, I just can't, when I think about who in the pandemic actually saved lives, what systems didn't fail us, it was community-based organizations who work on front lines with the people who are most affected. And, you know, we often say that the people who are closest to the problem have the solutions. And this is what happens when you empower the people who have the solutions to now activate their voice and to push for policy change. And, you know, I can't imagine what this lady, 7 miscarriages in 8 years, like, that has to be devastating. And yet and still, she thought it was important enough to keep on fighting. Praise God, she's had a son now, but important enough to keep on fighting. And so thanks to her, and thanks to the Nepali-speaking women-led service center, ADICAR, that helped to get this thing going.
This one sent me spiraling because I, like all of us, spend a lot of time in nail salons. And I started to dig into just the toxicity in nail products, which I really hadn't thought about. But obviously, what this article covers is things that can cause miscarriages. But there's also, like, formaldehyde and other toxins that can, like, disrupt your endocrine, like, disrupt the endocrine system. And I don't know if anyone else has ever had a heavy metals test done by your doctor, but you all should, because I had a ton of heavy metals in my blood. One of them was aluminum, because obviously I love canned tuna fish. I do. It's delicious.
The nails and I love tuna salad.
But I'm saying, but like, this is a thing. And I think we don't think about our health deeply enough and the things that we're putting on our body that impact how our body works and runs. And so I think this was just a signal to me to make sure that I understand clean, meaning clean product nail salons, because some of these polishes, and I read another report that some of the nail polish companies don't put the full extent of what's in the polishes on the labels, and it's not really regulated to the extent that it is in Europe, here in the United States. So thanks for this one. This one was really a...
This is kind of like what happens when you put product overall, right? When you put money overall, then just certain things just become dangerous by a byproduct. Oh, gosh. No nails, no tuna, chill.
You know, oftentimes things are surprising to me. However, my news today was not surprising. Evidently, companies do better when they have Black CEOs.
Black women, girl. Come on.
Black.
You got to start that again. Start that again.
Companies do better when they have Black women CEOs.
Surprise guest.
It doesn't say that. I was just editorializing.
Period.
It says,
but I mean, most of the current Black CEOs are women, though. So I mean, by proxy.
Say less, girl.
So this article's in the Washington Post, and researchers reviewing thousands of CEO appointments over the past two decades have found significant short-term upsides to the appointment of Black leaders. You know, the appointments of Black CEOs are more positive than for white CEOs in terms of market reactions. Researchers reviewing CEO appointments from 2001 to 2020 found that a median-sized firm appointing a Black chief executive saw an extra short-term bump of 3.1% to their market capitalization 3 days following the announcement. Like, sis is announced and then, boom, market impact. But when I started to dig into this article more, it is actually like heartbreaking, one of the reasons why, right? Like the disparities in all of this. So it's believed that because Black CEOs have to basically outperform their white counterparts, well, Black people have to outperform their white counterparts their whole entire careers, it actually makes them more experienced when they step into this role and therefore more impactful. So 93% of Black CEOs in this study had advanced degrees compared to 53% of white executives. Black executives had 1.6 more years of education than white executives and were more likely to have a degree from an elite top university. So fascinating. And I think another key element too that also really got to me, because I think this is also something that I face with my company, Maestro, is that when we're judged as a firm and when Black folks are judged in a corporate setting or any setting, really, they're judged on performance rather than potential, which, wow, imagine being judged on what you can likely do or are positioning yourself to do rather than just having to perform all the time. And so right now, to Kaya's point, the current six Black CEOs, Rosalind Brewer at Walgreens, Thasunda Brown Duckett at Teachers Insurance and Annuity Association, blah, 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 blah. It's a really long title.
Tia Creff. Then we have TIA Creff.
Yeah, that's a lot. That's and then I couldn't be the CEO of that because I can't even say it. And then our men friends, Robert Refkin of Compass, Marvin Ellison of Lowe's, yada, yada, yada. So I don't know. I just wanted to bring this one to the pod because I just, wow, Black excellence thriving as usual, but still underrepresented.
And you know, I'm totally making up stuff. This is just this is just what's going on in my head. So there's just not linking this to a stitch of data or facts, just a hypothesis. But I really am interested. And again, I don't even know how you would begin to measure something like this, but I just, there's something in me that's telling me there is a link to witnessing Black parenthood and being a good CEO. And there is a link between the things that you have to witness a Black parent do and how they have to handle household, how they have to be calm and cool. So what this reminded me of was the video of Nancy Pelosi that everybody's sharing of her being cool and calm. And I said, that's my mama. Now, my mama has, now we've had some January 6th in the house of in my parent houses. We had some January 6th days, and I see my mother be super calm, super cool, still lead. And I think that then, you know, my mother had a couple of businesses as I was growing up, but I seen her employ those tactics into how she ran her businesses. And yeah, I just, something's just telling me, you know, in the science of Miles is that there's something about witnessing Black parenthood and running a business well and being a good CEO that's also parallel, of course, with all the other stats and data and facts that you brought about performance. But yeah, I think it's also just cultural too.
You're right, and I said this episodes and episodes back about Black diplomats. Like, I do think it is cultural. I think how we relate to one another, how empathetic we are as a people, how resilient we are as a people. I think it has a lot to do with that as well. I totally agree.
I was excited when I read this article. And it is what I don't know. It's just what I know. A lot of times, you know, people have said to me in my leadership roles, oh my gosh, you're a unicorn. And I'm like, I might be a unicorn, but I'm from a herd of other unicorns. There's a whole lot of us out here. We're doing the do. You just don't see us. You won't give us the chance. You won't give us the opportunity. And, you know, that I think is, there are all kinds of studies that show, for example, that diverse wealth managers actually make more money for their customers than white wealth managers. Yet and still, you know, people tend to trust white wealth managers with their money more than they do diverse. Like, Black CEOs are better performing for your business, and still you won't. Like, this is why it's not about, you know, we gotta act like people are just capitalists, right? And as long as you're making the most money or having the best outcomes, that, you know, that's what the meritocracy is all about. That's what capitalism is all about. That's some BS, because this article tells you that you should go out and hire you some Black CEOs all over the place, all over the place. It was sad. And still, right? Like, our study also suggests that firms seemingly appoint Black CEOs only when they are excessively qualified, right? Excessively qualified. We likely have Black executives who would do quite well, who simply are never given the chance to lead an organization. So there is a bunch of unicorn talent sitting out there that is not being tapped because people don't have a chance. You know, if you come up in a Black family and your people are old enough, they'll tell you got to work twice as hard to get half as much. And that's what this article is bearing out. These people, you know, their credentials surpass their white peers. They have exhibited exceptional attributes, compared to their white peers. And yet and still, when do they call us? When the organization is failing, when there's a scandal, call the Black people to come in and clean it up, right? We will clean it up. We can clean it up and we can make it more profitable. But why do we have to do all of this? Why can't folks trust our leadership the way they trust mediocre white male leadership? I was on the phone with a funder who asked me to vouch for another Black leader before they gave her money. And I said, you know, here's the thing. You ain't calling me when you gave that white boy money over and over again when he failed at this organization and then at another one and then another one. You keep giving him money and you don't call and ask about him, but you want to call and ask about this Black woman who has a long-standing track record of success. It is so endemic that people don't even realize that they do it. But I would also sort of assert that folks are scared to let us lead because we are powerful and we do outperform. And so, I don't know, I am manifesting more Black CEOs across companies. I'm manifesting more Black women leaders across organizations. I'm manifesting it all. Yo, we taking over Broadway. We taking over the corporate space. I'm here for it all. Bring on a revolution.
Well, that's it. Thanks so much for tuning into Pod Save the People this week. Tell your friends to check it out. Make sure to rate it wherever you get your podcast, whether it's Apple Podcasts or somewhere else. And we will see you next week. Pod Save the People is a production of Crooked Media. It's produced by AJ Moultrie and mixed by Veronica Simonetti. And executive produced by me. Special thanks to our weekly contributors, Kai Henderson, D.R. Ballinger, and Miles Johnson.
Save on quality sofas, sectionals, top brand mattresses, and more during Haverty's President's Day sale. Find the style of furniture you've been looking for at Haverty's, online or in Columbus at Polaris.
Moro Casino. America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends. With thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.